This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bites. It is 12:06 on Tuesday, the 28th of September. My name is Audrey Raj, and for the first time this month, Hello, Frida Liu. Get the mic, Frida. Get the mic.
It's been a while. I don't know what to do. It's not even the first time. Like, we did meet at the beginning of the month.
Did we?
We did. And then now, of course, you know, we did. And then we said we won't see each other. We avoided each other the middle of the month because of, you know, birthdays and such. And now we're back again.
Yes, glad to have you back in the studio with me. I have missed you. On the show today, we are going to be talking about the 12th Malaysia Plan and how it benefits SMEs.
Right, so we have a poll happening on Twitter and Instagram. There is yes and no. And of course, we like to know why you say yes and why you say no. And I mean, we're glad that you're participating in the poll, but you know, a bit of explanation would help. Also over WhatsApp, 018-789-8899.
Yes, and we are talking about this because, you know, Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob launched the 12th Malaysia Plan in Parliament yesterday in the hopes that it would revitalize the country's economy after a difficult couple of years due to this pandemic, right? Now, with more focus given to healthcare, tech, green goals and high income jobs, you know, will the 12th Malaysia Plan finally get us to where we needed to be a year ago, in 2020. Now, during the launch in Parliament yesterday, Prime Minister Ismail Sabri said the country's financial position was expected to improve in 2023, with the economy targeted to grow 4.5% to 5.5% per annum in the next 5 years.
So the new five-year economic plan is supposed to boost infrastructure spending and commit to a carbon tax under climate change goals as the country looks to chart its way out of this pandemic-induced slump. The Prime Minister said that Malaysia showed average annual growth of 2.7% between 2016 and 2020, which was dragged down by a 5.6% contraction last year due to what you know what. Gross national income per capita rose to 42,500 in 2020, which is 20% lower than the level required to become a high income country, 20% lower. And Malaysia now expects to reach that target by 2025.
So according to our PM, the 12th Malaysia Plan is also a comprehensive development plan that will introduce a number of reforms to ensure sustainable economic growth and more equal distribution of opportunities and results. Malaysia's export-driven economy has taken a hit because of the pandemic. The central bank slashed its full-year growth forecast to 3 to 4% from 6 to 7.5% last month, which was the second cut by BNM this year. The government will spend 400 billion ringgit on existing and new development projects between now and 2025, which is a significant increase compared to the 260 billion ringgit spent during the 11th Malaysia Plan. Now, these include new highways and rail networks linking rural areas with urban and industrial hubs, more affordable housing, that's been a big one, as well as improvements in health, education and broadband connectivity.
Yes, broadband. So Malaysia also aims to become a carbon neutral country by 2050, adding that economic instruments such as carbon pricing and a carbon tax will be introduced. The government pledged to stop building coal-fired power stations as it continues its efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions intensity of GDP by 45% in 2030. Other promises include plans to reduce the country's dependence on foreign labour, provide support to small and medium-sized businesses, enter Malaysia into a regional investment hub.
Yeah, additionally, the 12th MP outlines initiatives to strengthen the public sector delivery system, including the adoption of quote unquote whole of government and whole of nation approaches. So, you know, on a positive note, the Prime Minister said that 8 economic aid and stimulus packages implemented since March last year, March 2020, had stabilized the economy. He also said the national GDP has expanded by 16.1% in the second quarter of this year after having shrunk for the last 4 quarters.
He also noted that at least 50% of development expenditure will be allocated to 6 least developed states, which are Sabah, Sarawak, Kelantan, Terengganu, Kedah and Perlis, to ensure more balanced growth and development goals. Ismail Sabri also stressed on the digitization of the economy, which is expected to contribute 25.5% to the GDP by 2025. Under the 12th Malaysia Plan, efforts will focus on providing an enabling government for the growth of digital economy, strengthening the provision of digital infrastructure and services, developing future-ready digital talent, as well as positioning Malaysia as the ASEAN Digital Centre.
Yes, so it was a much-awaited plan. I know we were, you know, just waiting online for the digital copy for the longest time. And when it came in, it was like, whoa, 532 pages, 523 pages, you know, a lot to get through. But it is, I guess, a testament to the commitment that the current government has into developing the country and really looking into goals for the future. You know, like one of the big ones for me was our target to the
carbon emissions.
Yes, to be a carbon neutral country by the year 2050. And this is a big one. This is something that we've seen other countries embark on, and you know, like really put down detailed goals and plans to get to this, right? So I'm really looking forward to more details on that one. But we are asking you on the show today if you think the 12th Malaysia Plan will benefit SMEs. Why or why not? Get in touch with us and send us your thoughts. 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp. You can also reach us on Twitter and on Instagram. At BFM Radio is our handle. Our poll at the moment is a bit lopsided. We'll get to the figures in just a bit. But in the meantime, taking us out of this one is Rose Royce with Funk Factory. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with Frida Liu and Audrey Raj. On the show today, we are asking you about this.
Do you think the 12th Malaysia Plan will benefit SMEs? Why or why not? On Twitter, it's what I was saying. It's very bottom heavy. It's very pear-shaped with yes saying that the Malaysia Plan will benefit SMEs at 10% and 90% saying no.
Over on Instagram, it's 15% who say yes and 85% who say no. And we've got a tweet here that I want to read. And this is from AJ who says, "Stop asking survey questions when the answer is clear as the blue sky." Is it really as clear as the blue sky? Because it's still, you know, one out of 10 people who think that this plan will benefit SMEs. So one out of 10 people have a different opinion.
I think that's the where this is coming from is the plan works if we work the plan.
Interesting
one. Okay, so anyway, we got a comment here from over WhatsApp. I'm from Anwar Juma Boy. He said, "Good plan to spend lots of money on infrastructure. We are unable to change mindsets. That's the problem to get to a developed and fairer society."
Over on Twitter, we've got one here from Michael who says, "It can be a very beautiful plan, but anyone tracks, who tracks the result," I think is what Michael is saying. And we've got another one here from Trisha Yeo, who was on the morning run this morning talking about the 12th Malaysia Plan. And she said, she tweeted about this and she says, "In short, some good points on governance and distribution, a bit weaker on growth measures." Right. Now, we also, sometime last week, there was an article in Free Malaysia Today, where economist Jeffrey Williams spoke to the paper about his wish list for the 12th Malaysia Plan. Now, in that article, he said that the 12th Malaysia Plan needs to be different from previous plans and should not include useless projects and packages as the nation struggles with unemployment and economic slowdown. He said it should also not be driven by lobby groups with agendas such as green growth or the fourth industrial revolution. Okay. And Jeffrey also said that it should be less government-driven and more balanced to create a social market response to future development needs with enterprise and competition at the core, but social impact as the aim.
He also added that the priorities for the 12th Malaysia Plan should be on basic issues of growth, incomes, income equality, the creation of meaningful, well-paid jobs, rebuilding SMEs, supporting micro-enterprises, and restoring a competitive enterprise-driven economy. It must also focus on promoting social protection, rebuilding pensions and social assistance, and reinvigorating a vibrant environment for domestic and foreign direct investment.
Here, here. Now, he said that the 10th Malaysia Plan specifically aimed to create 3.3 million jobs, 68% of which were specifically designed not to require a university degree, and that more than 56% was specifically targeted for the low-income group. So now we have millions of low-skilled, low-income jobs, said Jeffrey.
Right. So Jeffrey also said that Malaysia was unlikely to reach its high-income status target within the 12 Malaysia plan period of the next 5 years, with more unemployed and underemployed Malaysians than before. We need to recognise that we have lost at least 2 years of economic growth, with GDP now lower than before the crisis. Malaysia's development has gone backwards in the last 2 years.
So he had a lot of interesting things to say before the 12th Malaysia plan was launched in Parliament yesterday. So we thought, now that the plan has been tabled, we wanted to get Jeffrey's thoughts on the subject and if the plans align with his thoughts and opinions from last week's piece in FMT, right? So Jeffrey, thank you for staying on the line and through that long introduction. Now, first off, you know, of course, your thoughts, you know, what are your overall thoughts on the 12th Malaysia plan now that we know what's in it? How do you feel about it?
Overall, I think that the 12th Malaysia plan is a rather ordinary plan for rather extraordinary times, a little like the budget, actually, that was announced last year. It looks very much like a template of earlier plans. And there's very little acknowledgement that the Malaysian economy has actually been pretty traumatized by the lockdowns and is in a very serious state. I think we need to recognize that the impact of the pandemic has had a structural effect on the Malaysian economy. And Bank Negara and our own analysis suggests that underlying growth potential has fallen from previously somewhere between 4 or 5% per year to perhaps as low as 2.5% to 3.5% per year. So there is a significant change in the underlying growth potential of the economy, and the Malaysia plan should acknowledge that, and I don't think that it does. We also need to recognize that we've lost at least 2 years of economic growth and development, with gross domestic product now lower than it was before the crisis. So Malaysia's development has actually gone backwards in the last 2 years, and that needs to be recovered.
Right.
Now, this has had a devastating impact, a devastating social impact in particular, with more than half of those on salaries now earning less than the poverty line income, and about 20% of the workforce now unemployed or underemployed. And the M40, the middle income group, has been hit as well as the lower income group, the B40. So it's affected everybody across the board. Pensions have been wiped out for millions of people. Tens of thousands of SMEs have closed. Education opportunities for school children have been set back. Our higher education system has been damaged, especially among the private universities and colleges. The health system has been overwhelmed with huge backlogs of non-COVID cases. And given that background, we were expecting that the 12th Malaysia plan would acknowledge this structural change and these immediate problems and then provide a plan to address them head on. And I'm not sure that we have that.
Right. Ordinary, you say. So was there anything, though, that surprised you or you did not expect to see?
There were some things about the 12th Malaysia plan that were a little surprising and that perhaps we didn't expect to see, or certainly I didn't expect to see. The first was that the assessment of some of the earlier Malaysia plans, particularly the 11th Malaysia plans, showed a huge number of indicators against targets, which helped us to understand that many of the targets of the previous Malaysia plans weren't met, in fact, particularly under the 11th Malaysia plan. And this was true across a lot of sectors, in fact, almost all areas. So this level of honest assessment of the underperformance of previous plans is surprising, but it's particularly surprising because, having admitted to the relative failure of earlier approaches, the government has now come up with almost exactly the same type of plan for the next 5 years. So one would have hoped that having admitted that the things didn't go so well previously, that they might have had a different approach. That's quite a surprise. Another surprise was that the target for economic growth was set at between 4.5% and 5.5% over the course of the 12th Malaysia plan, when we know that under the previous 11th Malaysia plan, economic growth was only 2.7% actually on average. And this is particularly surprising because earlier this year, Bank Negara was telling us that the structural impact of the lockdowns has reduced underlying growth between 1.3 and 1.5% below what it would otherwise have been. So that's quite a surprise because it contradicts what the central bank was saying only a few months earlier. So if you base your development plans on forecasts of 4.5% to 5.5% per year, they're almost certain to fail almost from the start. And this is why, I suppose, the government needs to have better economic forecasters, which we've mentioned before.
Yes, yes, we have. Now, Prof, what would you change? Now, if you could make improvements to the 12th Malaysia Plan, what sectors would you focus on and what would those improvements be?
I think to improve the plan, first, I would have cut its scope considerably to avoid another list of targets and themes, enablers and game changers. I think that under the current circumstances, the plan needs to be simpler because we are in a recovery phase, and even that recovery phase will take very many years. The danger is that if you have a complicated laundry list of projects, this may distract attention and, more importantly, distract resources from the priority areas at a time when we really do need to be very single-minded. The focus must be on the priorities of basic issues such as economic growth, incomes and salaries and wages, income inequality, creating meaningful, well-paid jobs for people, rebuilding SMEs, supporting micro-enterprises, restoring competitive enterprise-driven economy. And it must also focus on social protection, rebuilding pensions and social assistance, and, of course, rebuilding vibrant domestic investment and encouraging foreign domestic investment again. Now, although we saw many of these themes, they often get lost in the longer list, and sometimes there is a distraction from the main priorities because we're looking at some of the other themes, which are not actually priorities at the moment. I would suggest that green growth is not particularly a priority at the moment compared to, for example, helping people who are unemployed, millions of people who are unemployed, for example. Mm. On a separate issue, I mean, from my own perspective, my own background in higher education, I would have liked to see more emphasis on higher education, not in terms of government interfering too much, but in encouraging reform of the higher education system, mergers of universities, for example, even between public and private universities, and particularly reform and restructuring of PTPTN so that it can play a much more active role as an institutional investor in the higher education system rather than simply a loans agency. I mean, my target would have been for Malaysia to abolish student loans altogether, and I think that would have been an ambitious element of the 12th Malaysia Plan if we had seen it.
Right. You know, Prof, you've been vocal about the saturation of low-income, low-skilled jobs in the country. Does the 12th Malaysia Plan address these issues?
When it comes to jobs, and particularly the problem of very large numbers of people who are underemployed or who are in low-income or low-skilled jobs, although there were some targets for employment tucked away in the data appendices at the back of the report, I don't really see a specific acknowledgement of this problem of low-paid, low-skilled jobs. And particularly, despite what was said about the 11th Malaysia Plan, there was very little discussion of the causes of this problem of low-paid and low-skilled jobs, which arise out of the policies set out in the 10th Malaysia Plan, for example, which specifically targeted to create millions of low-skilled jobs. Now, I'm not sure that the 12th Malaysia Plan acknowledges that problem, and as a consequence, it doesn't present very many ideas in order to solve that problem, which is a particular issue for me because, first, there are millions of people in that situation, and secondly, the best way to look after people's welfare is to provide well-paid, meaningful forms of income generation, and that's primarily through work. Now, within the 12th Malaysia Plan, there was a target set, for example, for median salaries, which I think was put at 2,900 ringgit, which is barely 200 ringgit above the living wage that was calculated by Bank Negara for a single person. So that target to help raise salaries and raise income from work is not particularly ambitious. I also don't see the connections being made between the many programs that have been announced and the job creation potential within each of those programs in order to address the structural unemployment problem, because Malaysia faces almost 20% of the workforce who are unemployed or underemployed, according to the latest data from the Department of Statistics. So, for example, how many jobs will the green growth agenda create? Will the higher environmental regulations that are implied reduce growth and employment, or will they create growth and employment? What will be the net benefit of the green growth projects and enablers in terms of the net benefit in terms of growth, the net benefit in terms of incomes, social benefits, and of course, employment and job creation? I don't see that that analysis is there inside the chapters on environmental projects. Similarly, when we're looking at the technology agenda, we know that many of the fourth industrial revolution technologies replace jobs, and that's what they are specifically designed to do. So we would be looking for an analysis which asks the question, what is the net impact of job creation from promoting new technologies under fourth industrial revolution projects? Will it create higher unemployment, which will force down salaries, or will it help to create new opportunities for different types of employment, and where will they be and how many types of jobs will be created? Again, I don't see that issue has been acknowledged or raised, and I don't see that it's been addressed in the analysis within the 12th Malaysia Plan. So we're not really getting to the getting a grip, actually, on this issue of low-paid, low-skilled jobs.
Right. All right, we're going to need to take a quick break for some messages. But when we come back, we speak to Professor Jeffrey Williams from Malaysia University of Science and Technology about Malaysia's target to become a high-income for high-income status by the year 2025. All that and more happening on Enterprise BizBytes. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Breaking Financial Matters, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. You are listening to Enterprise BizBytes with Frida Liu and Audrey Raj. On the show today, we are talking about the 12th Malaysia Plan.
And if you think the 12th Malaysia Plan will benefit SMEs, let us know over on Twitter and Instagram. There's a simple poll happening, yes, no, that's at BFM Radio. But also just give us your thoughts around it as well. And you can also do that via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899.
Now, on the line with us, we still have Professor Jeffrey Williams from Malaysia University of Science and Technology. And we have him on the line with us because last week, Professor spoke to Free Malaysia Today about his wish list for the 12th Malaysia Plan. And now that the plan has been tabled, we wanted to get his thoughts on the subject and if the plan aligns with his thoughts and opinions from last week.
Right. So, Professor, in the article on FMT last week, you said the 12th Malaysia Plan should not be driven by lobby groups with agendas such as green growth or the fourth industrial revolution. So does the 12th Malaysia Plan announcement align with your thoughts?
In order to see whether a development plan like the 12th Malaysia Plan is driven by special interest groups or lobbyists, the simplest way to do that is to just check whether the government announces a big increase in spending on a long laundry list of relatively vague or ill-defined projects. And so if we look at the 12th Malaysia Plan, that's exactly what we have. So if we're asking the question, is it driven by special interests and lobby groups? I think probably the answer to that question is yes. Because real structural reform in terms of a development policy doesn't always require massive spending by the government on a whole long list of projects. It can be done by supply side changes, for example, in regulatory and legal requirements, the liberalization of markets, for example, opening up new opportunities for private investment, reducing crowding out from government activity, for example, changing the whole philosophy of the development process to encourage a market-driven, enterprise-driven approach. And that doesn't necessarily require large amounts of government money on a very long list of individual projects. So these types of changes in the structure of the economy can reduce government spending, actually, in favour of market-driven initiatives. But here in the 12th Malaysia Plan, we see a list of ill-defined project areas, enabling programmes, game changers, all of the consultancy terms that you would use in order to describe this type of change management process. Because for me, that's a better description of what the Malaysia Plan is. Mm. It isn't actually, for me, a particularly well-defined economic development strategy. It's more of a consultancy managerial change management strategy rather than an economic policy. So this list of ill-defined project areas offer opportunities for advisors and consultants and think tanks mainly in order to go ahead and develop what do these game changers look like? What do these enabling programs look like? But very few of these things offer particular solutions to well-defined urgent problems and priorities. So unfortunately, it's more of the same.
Right. And finally, you recently said that Malaysia is unlikely to reach its high income status target. Could you expand on that? And if so, when can Malaysia expect to actually reach those targets?
Okay, so when we're talking about the high income target, the World Bank high income threshold, the first thing I should say is that I'm not a fan of the high income target for reasons that we've discussed on BFM many times before. Whatever I say has to be viewed from that perspective. I'm not a fan of this target, mainly because we are much more concerned about the quality of growth and the distribution of income rather than whether we hit a particular target or not. And the second reason I'm not a big fan of the high income threshold target is that it's purely an administrative threshold. It doesn't really have very much economic meaning. That being said, which puts my prejudices on the table, the situation is that the Malaysian economy has been hit very hard by the lockdowns, and we've had a very big structural impact, which according to Bank Negara has reduced underlying growth potential, as we mentioned before. And so the economy won't be growing at its usual 4 to 5% rate each year from now onwards. It won't, because of the impact of the lockdown. So what that means is that even if you have a high income target, a high income threshold, it's going to take us very much longer to hit that target. So back in March, the World Bank said that it was expecting that Malaysia would get to that point anytime between 2024 and 2028 in their assessment. Now, I would expect that under the current circumstances, given that we've lost 2 years of economic growth and that GDP has fallen back rather than going forward, and given the fact that the underlying rate of growth has fallen structurally, that we would be looking at the longer end of that period between 2024 and 2028. So in other words, Malaysia isn't likely to hit the high income threshold during the period of the 12th Malaysia Plan, given that scenario.
All right. Thank you for that, Professor. Always a pleasure having you on. That was Professor Jeffrey Williams, economist at Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Now, Frida, it's about time for us to wrap up, but let's take a look at the poll.
Right. So the poll at do you think the 12th Malaysia Plan will benefit SMEs? Yes, a whopping 9.4%, and no at 90.6% saying that no.
Over on Instagram, it is still at 15% who say yes, it will benefit SMEs, 85% who say no. And we have a couple of comments.
Yeah, we got a comment here from Maggie Best. I'm not sure because I haven't finished reading the 500 over pages. But it's okay. Right. A lot of Malaysians out there believe in the government knows best. Seriously. Air quotes.
Maybe just one message here on Twitter to end it. We've got Michael Lee who says, yes, if all that described on the plans like the carbon neutral, education, broadband, financial, houses, etc. is well tendered and no bias or backyard games, no racial selection of SMEs, and the allocation of the 400 billion is used wisely and accountably to share and also to share all spending info. Right. Yeah. Well, that is a wrap for us. But we'll have more. Our coverage of the 12th Malaysia Plan continues at 2 p.m. On Live and Learn. The team from Bigger Picture. The Bigger Picture team. They will be speaking to Azrul Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, on how the plan factors in health. So stay tuned for that. That's happening at 2 p.m. today. But if you missed out on any part of this show, you can go look for the podcast on our website. That's bfm.my. You can also find all our podcasts on the BFM app. That's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. Frida and myself will be back again same time tomorrow for more on Enterprise Biz Bytes. But now, taking us out of the show, we have The Church with The Unguarded Moment. Thank you for joining us on Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.